Oh, thank you so much.
Now, did you fall
it's
out of
great
your...
to be here.
Yes, thank you for being here. Did you fall out of your chair when you heard the news?
Actually, I got the news a little differently than the way people do. Often they're awakened in the middle of the night. But I was out of town in a hotel, and I had Do Not Disturb on my phone. So I actually got a good night's sleep, and after the alarm went off and I had so many messages, I thought, well, either somebody is playing a prank or maybe I won the Nobel Prize. So I went to the Nobel Prize website and there was my name. So it was very cool.
Okay. So that was going to be my next question was, okay, so did you submit your work or does someone else submit your work? And kind of how does that process work so that you know that you're actually being considered?
Well, I didn't really know. The process is a little complex. There's a nomination process, but it does not involve the individual. And they actually work very hard, and they're very successful at keeping it a surprise. So I think their dream is that when the prize is given, if you're in North America, they have some people that come to the door in the wee hours of the morning, knock on the door, and you're there in your slippers and your bathrobe and your glasses crooked and your hair disheveled and you're half asleep, and they tell you that you won a Nobel Prize, and you go, ah, and I think that's their dream. And then they like to post that on the Nobel Prize website.
Well, you did not live up to their dream in that respect then, but I think you have
I actually got a full night's sleep, which probably I needed given all the activity that followed, all the messages that I have to answer, and good wishes from former students and colleagues.
Well, yeah, you're a popular man. So they don't tell you, the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, they don't tell you, hey, you're in the running for the Nobel Prize?
No. So you get little hints. Like there was a Wall Street Journal article a few years ago that suggested we might get it. But there are a lot of good economists out there, and there are a lot of people who would be good choices who don't get it. So it's actually kind of random, even if you've done good work. My thesis advisor, Steve Ross, should have gotten the Nobel Prize, but he passed a few years ago. He never got it. So you never know.
Now, does it have to be given to someone who's living, or can they do that after death?
So I don't know exactly what the rules are, but what I think goes on is that very occasionally somebody dies between the award, like the ceremony the other day and the award ceremony. Then they may give it posthumously. But I think normally it's for living candidates.
Okay. Philip, in simple terms, what did your research do that led to the award?
We were looking at what banks do and that contributes to the economy and why banks are subject to runs. And a lot of people before that would talk about banking panics, like kind of a mass hysteria that leads to bank runs. And we took the perspective of looking at the fact that even if people are completely rational and the bank assets are safe, banks are still fragile. Because if you think that everybody else will take their money out, you know that when the bank pays them off, they're going to have to liquidate some assets at a loss, and they won't have enough money left to pay you. And so you'd better go and try to get your money out too. And that leads to a bank run in our setting. Now, an obvious question is, well, why would you ever set up a bank with contracts that have this problem? I think that's probably the more interesting part of our work. We have an answer to that, which is that people like liquidity. So you have money in the bank, maybe that you won't probably use for a year or for 10 years, but you're not sure. It could be that tomorrow somebody will be selling a fabulous car that you just can't live without, and you'd really like to have the cash to pay for the car. Or it could be that you have some unexpected medical expenses, or you have some friend who needs some financial help. And so you want to have the option of taking your money out. And of course, then the danger is all these reasons for wanting your money out are kind of personal and not something that people can, the bank can, does, has a checklist and say, okay, you can't have your money because we know you don't really need it. These are like kind of personal shocks. And it's exactly this ability to take your money out, this convenience, which is valuable to the customers, which makes banks fragile. And then we also have a policy implication, which is that if you have deposit insurance, then that can make banks stable again. Because even if you think everybody else is going to take their money out, you know, you have deposit insurance backed by the government to protect your savings. So even if you think everybody else is taking their money out, you can leave your money in safely because you're protected by the deposit insurance.
Philip Dybvig, a Washington University professor, has been awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics for research into banking and financial crises. You talked about the insurance part, and did you get into some other ways that, that banks can use to avoid bank runs?
Yes. The other ways are things that are a little less reliable, but they also can work well. One is that if the authorities, like the central bank or whoever's executing this in the country you're looking at, can be relied upon to provide liquidity to banks that have a liquidity problem, then supplying that liquidity, like through the discount window at the Fed, can also possibly prevent runs. That's a little weaker because the central bank may have discretion, and you may be worried that they'll decide not to do it. The other thing that we talk about is so-called bank holiday or suspension of convertibility, where if the bank is just getting hemorrhaging of funds, that they stop letting people take their deposits out. And of course, that's really damaging to the people who need the money and have a legitimate need to get their money out. So you know, we think that deposit insurance is a better solution.
Now, since this research was done like 40 years ago, almost 1983, does what you lay out in the research, does it still hold up in today's banking world, and why?
Well, it kind of depends on where it is. I mean, it helps us to remember why we need the deposit insurance, and it also was a good description of some things that happened in the 2008 crisis. And it's, you know, it's possible, I haven't studied it enough, but it's possible things that we see in crypto banks also look very much like the bank runs we're talking about. And the interesting thing about the crypto banks is they don't have the protection of the deposit insurance to convince people not to run.
Since this was the research was from 1983, I'm curious, Philip, why it was considered now by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences? I mean, is it because of the way economics works? It's, you know, a tried and true practice,
well,
or what?
Yeah, it is something about the way the economics prize works, and it's surprising that it hasn't changed. But this prize was added later, and it's not funded by Nobel's fund, and when it was added, there were a lot of old economists who were thought to be deserving, and they were kind of playing catch up. So somehow they've never transitioned to where most of the prizes are, where people might get the prize 20 or 30 years after what you do. Most people get it when they're older, and I you know, it's kind of interesting that's persisted for so many years. But I think that's the reason.
That's Philip Dybvig, a Washington University professor in St. Louis, who has been awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics for research into banking and financial crises. This is Show Me Today, the voice of Missouri.